Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Jordan Roybern, founder and editor of the Daily Gold. Now, Jordan, I want to start off with a quick comment on the silver chart. We're looking at it in more a couple year time frame here. Is look, silver went through a very nice price appreciation right after the whole COVID crash when the silver price dropped down to about $1,164. And then in a matter of months, shot the whole way up to just short of $30. $29.92 was the high in August. And then even made another high of $30.35 on the back of kind of that silver squeeze at the beginning of this year in February. And really, since that high in August, let's say, right around $30, it's moved sideways. So we are a year into this sideways consolidation between about $22, $23, up to $30. A lot of investors are saying, what's it going to take to break silver higher? Or is silver going to break lower? Or again, are we just going to be in this sideways, choppy market for, who knows, another year? What's your takeaway from this chart pattern that we're seeing here, Jordan?
Well, silver is very interesting because it's been able to hold above, let's just call it 22. It's been able to hold above 22 now, and I'm looking at a monthly chart, two different times. So recently and then at the beginning of the correction. And that tells me, amongst other things, silver could be building a long-term bull flag pattern. So typically when you get a really strong vertical move, and for a bull flag pattern can develop if after that move, the market consolidates that move and is holding most of its gains. And I believe the 38% retracement of that huge move is around 22. So taking this bird's eye view, you know, silver has done a really good job holding the 38% retracement. So it's now done it twice if we're looking at the monthly chart. And if you go back to, if you look at silver, had this little correct, you know, it had a huge move in 2009, not quite as big as the one recently. And I mean, it had a shorter correction, but it did almost test the 40-month moving average before it really exploded in 2010, 2011. You go back to the late 70s, I mean, it was consolidating, not quite in a bull flag, but it did hold the majority of its gains. I mean, that took 3+ years. And towards the end of it, it did hold the 40-month moving average. So I mention that because if silver were to, if you told me silver is going to continue to hold above 22 for another, let's say, 9 to 12 months, I mean, that to me would put silver in a position where if we're looking past 12 months, you know, around 18 months or 24 months, it would be in a bullish position to break above 30 and make that really huge move. And so if this bull flag continues, it continues to hold 22 for another 6 or 9 months, then this, I mean, the odds of this being a bull flag pattern, I mean, there at that point, you would have to say it's probably like 80 or 90%. You know, right now, I'd probably say it's 60, 65%. But if that happens, Corey, the measured upside target for breaking above, you know, 28, 29 on the monthly chart, that would be about $49. So silver, I mean, the long and short of it is, or I should say the short of it is, if silver can continue to hold above the low 20s, you know, for another 6 or 9 months, I mean, it could be setting up this powerful bull flag pattern where, you know, 12, 24, 18 months, whatever, it would have a really good chance to break out and then, you know, make that next big leg towards 49.50, which would be a really strong upside target.
Jordan, what if we get a break sometime in the near term, even by the end of this year, whether it is higher, say over $30, or down to 20 or even sub $20 prices in silver? What does that do to the charts? How important, how critical would that be?
You know, Corey, that's a really good point. I mean, there is a lot of support around, let's say 2021. So, I mean, it's possible it could dip below that 22 level on the monthly chart. It would depend what happened after that. And it would also depend on the macro circumstances. Maybe it's just a flush out like we saw in gold recently. You know, maybe it breaks below, but it doesn't make a monthly close below 22. I mean, it's a good question, but at this point, I'm not real keen on that just because I think we've held the 22 level for the time being. Those are my comments on that.
Well, Jordan, one question I have, and we talked about this a little bit off mic, is, you know, for years, maybe for 6 or 7 years, people were pining for higher prices in silver above $20 for the mining stocks, because most of the miners are in the money above 18 bucks, let's say. And I know that a lot of the silver miners have diversified into gold, and they still have a lot of base metals, but gold's still at 1800, zinc and lead are up sharply from where they were 2 years ago. So really, in every metal component that a silver producer, quote unquote, does produce, they're making money at these current levels. And yet a lot of the producers in the silver space and all the related silver stocks have continued to pull back even while silver held this range. What do you make of that environment? What do you think's happening there?
Well, I think that one thing, when we're thinking, well, if silver can just get above 20 or 22, we're thinking about that. You know, by the time it actually happened, a lot of these silver companies had, the ones that had still been around, they had to, you know, dilute themselves for years and years. So their you know, their share structures, their market caps were much different than they were, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So that's one factor. I mean, another factor is, I guess, you know, looking at it in real terms, if you're measuring it against costs, and if we just say inflation is a couple, you know, percent per year, 5% per year in terms of cost inflation. So going above $20 today or a year ago, I mean, that's quite a bit different in real terms than, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So that's another factor. And then on top of that, you know, the market always looks ahead. So we had this great move in silver. We had an epic move for, I mean, it was only 4 months, but it was pretty epic a year ago. And silver companies discounted the silver price being in the high 20s. They remained around those levels even when we had the silver squeeze. You know, that failed operation. Silver got back to 30. So there were some stocks and silver stocks in that period that made a new high. So I would say that those levels were discounted. But now, I mean, we're looking at 24. That's 20% off the high. I mean, that's significant for producers. So the market's always looking forward. And the market, you know, after we had the failed silver squeeze, the market just did not think that the path of least resistance for silver would be higher. So it began discounting, you know, prices in the mid-20s. And so remember, I mean, the market is always looking forward, trying to anticipate what's to come. So we have to be careful about, you know, singing past praises, you know, and what just happened in recent quarters or the last year or two, because that stuff has already been discounted.
That's a solid point, and the markets are forward-looking, and a lot of that may already baked in. A lot of people still made the case that when silver did those runs to, you know, even when it got to 25, 26, 28, 30, they didn't really move up in the miners didn't really move up in proportion to just how much their margins were increasing at that time. And maybe that's due to some of their input cost rising, or the fact that they had blown out their share structures. Do you think it's similar in gold? Because we saw the same pattern. Gold went to 2100 last summer, and really a lot of the miners didn't keep moving when it got to the 1900, the 1921 breakout level above the 2011 high. Same thing. The miners kind of slowed down their growth, and they didn't keep blasting higher with the metals price. And a lot of people want to see that leverage of 2, 3, 4 times leverage to the metals price, and they didn't see it. So now they're a little disillusioned. And a year later, after the pullback, they're even more disillusioned. Do you think the same thing happened in gold then too?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a function of, I mean, we've seen it in recent months. You know, we had these good rebounds in gold, and you know, the miners have really been underwhelming relative to gold. And so I think it's a function of the market, you know, the big money just doesn't think gold is going to break out. It thinks it's going to continue to remain range bound or in a correction consolidation. So that's, and also we have to look, there's sometimes when the market really moves, you know, you're talking about 2 or 3 or 4x leverage. I mean, sometimes when the market really, really moves, I mean, the miners will just dramatically outperform the metals in a small amount of time. And, you know, I would think that's if and when we see gold moving forward, eventually take out 1900 and have a meaningful, you know, weekly or monthly or even quarterly close. I think that that'll be the point when you start to see the miners will strongly outperform the metals again, well, especially gold, because then, you know, 1900 is such significant resistance on all time frames that you take that out, then the market, the big money, will start to realize, you know, this is eventually going to go back to 2100 and go higher. And then you start to see the market, you know, discounting higher gold prices, anticipating higher gold prices. And that's when share prices will dramatically outperform gold.
Jordan, doesn't it, again, just kind of come down to the fact that, fine, yes, precious metals companies, mining companies in general are making money, but again, investors have been burned over the last decade plus, and the fact of the matter is other markets just continue to rise. So if we're not in a precious metals rising environment, then sure, these companies are making money, but again, markets are forward-looking, as you said, and until, let's say, metals, again, start to outperform some of the broad markets, investors naturally are distracted and riding that wave higher in other sectors.
Yes. I mean, when the stock market is performing well and it's outperforming gold, like we've seen over the last 12, 15 months, it's just, you know, capital is going to flow in that direction. It's going to move out of gold and go into the stock market, you know, get flowed out of gold and went into other commodities at the same time. So, I mean, that's one problem for gold, which we, you know, we talk about all the time. And the second thing is, yeah, I'm seeing this in a lot of marketing from just individuals and even from some company executives. Yeah, it's great that the mining companies are making money now. That's what they're supposed to do. I mean, they're in business to make money. I mean, that, why else would you be in business? So it's great that these senior mining companies are making a lot of money. But, you know, number one, that's what they're supposed to do. That's why they're in business. Number two, it's already been discounted by the market. To the second point, you know, the market is looking forward. It's anticipating, and the market doesn't think that earnings and cash flow are going to grow that much, or, you know, if at all, from here moving forward over the next, you know, 6 to 9 months, because the market thinks that, you know, gold prices are going to continue to correct, consolidate, trade in a range, whatever phrase you want to use. So that to me explains why, you know, the fact that these share prices are still struggling when it looks like they're, you know, operationally and financially, they're in a better position.
One more question I have, Jordan, is with these producers, and in particular, not just the seniors, their plates are full, and a lot of times people only look to the majors to see if they're going to start picking around at some of the smaller miners. But the mid tiers, and those producers, let's say in gold, that are doing 200,000 plus, maybe up to a million, they're making money too, and they're more likely to start making acquisitions. So, do you think that with these cashed up producers, we may see them go down the food chain and start taking over some of these good development stage projects, or even some of the smaller producers? Would you expect to see a pickup in that now that they have the funds to do so?
It's not my area of expertise, but my guess would be usually share prices play a bigger role. So I think if we see at some point the share prices of a few mid-tiers that want to acquire, if the share price gets much stronger than juniors, you know, if the relative difference there moves in favor of mid-tiers, then I think that's when the time for an acquisition would be more ripe. So, you know, who knows, maybe during the next leg higher, whenever that happens, you know, if we see seniors and mid-tiers, especially if they start to move up before the juniors and there's some difference there in terms of the, you know, the relative performance. You know, because it's your stock is a currency. So if a mid-tier, if gold breaks above 1900, a mid-tier stock starts doing really well and the junior they want to acquire isn't really moving, I think that would be, you know, you have the 1-2 punch of, okay, the gold market's breaking out, we have to get bigger. And then secondly, well, you know, we want to buy this company, but it's getting cheaper because our stock is moving and performing much better than that company. So that's, again, I'm not an expert on that, but that would just be my guess.
All right, Jordan, wrap us up then with where you're focused on. I know you like to dive down into the smaller, some of the exploration and junior companies in the sector, but do you see a sweet spot right now? If we assume that, look, let's say silver doesn't really do anything, even for a year, stays range bound. Who knows what gold's going to do? Maybe that stays range bound as well. Where do you see opportunities?
That's a great question. I think if you're an investor that wants to hold for a couple years, I think the best opportunities are in probably developers that are going to build a mine that has potential to scale you know, and if they're kind of at the towards the bottom of the development curve, you can find some value there. I mean, I did buy an optionality play a couple days ago just because it was so bombed out. So there's no one size fits all answer, but I think if you want to be a buy and hold investor for a couple years, I think looking at junior producers that have growth potential and developers that can build and scale, I think those are the best long-term values. But look, if you're an expert on a particular exploration company and it's been really bombed out, it has a lot of cash, you know, that could end up being a great buy alongside producers and developers.
Okay. Jordan, great chatting with you. As always, buddy, I always enjoy looking at the charts with you and also the discussion on, yeah, why some of these metal stocks, especially the producers, are not moving. We hear a lot of, unfortunately, kind of complaining out of the investors. But the fact of the matter is the market is telling us that, look, maybe these metals prices aren't going anywhere, at least in the near term. And these producers, while generating cash and free cash flow, maybe they just need a little bit more time to build up on some of that and then start to grow in different avenues. Jordan, thanks as always for your time. We'll chat again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your week.